for the most part, society isn't too hard on me as a person who stutters. The pressure that I feel to be fluent is mostly a result of me wanting to be like everybody else. Look, this is what it is. You stutter, you can either accept it or wallow in it. Fluency has just become something that I find is not necessary, and I'd rather just be happy with being myself and doing the things that I want to do despite my stuttering.
Darren Johnson, today on Stutter Talk.
Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 577 for April 24th, 2016. I'm your host, Peter Reitzis, in Carrboro, North Carolina, starting off with some good voluntary stuttering, pseudo-stuttering, fake stuttering, whatever you'd like to call it. We have on the line Darren Johnson. Hey, Darren.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm great. You've got horns in your background. I've got leaf blowers in my background, but we're going to make this happen, right?
Let's do it.
All right. Darren Johnson is a 22-year-old graduate student who is originally from Maryland and joins us via Skype from Manhattan, where he is pursuing a PhD in chemical biology at the Weill Cornell Medical College. And Mr. Johnson has lived in Manhattan for almost a year now. So are you missing crab cakes now?
I am missing all things crab. Old Bay, crab cakes, crab legs, all of it.
yeah. There's not much of that going on here in North Carolina. I'm originally from outside of Philadelphia, so I miss cheesesteaks and hoagies with a passion, but that's for another day. Actually, I was born in Delaware, so I had my fair share of crab cakes too. So, but on to stuttering. So right now you are interested in getting comfortable with the act of stuttering and with stuttering more openly and more authentically. And this is a term, this authentic stuttering is a term that we keep hearing from people in New York City. So what is authentic stuttering to you? Can you tell us about that?
So I feel like that term authentic stuttering kind of stems from the ideologies of the American Institute for Stuttering. And the way that it was explained to me is just letting your stuttering rip. In the case of my stuttering, I have a lot of blocks in my speech, and that's a result of me not just displaying my natural speech pattern and, like I said earlier, letting it rip. So right now, what I'm trying to do is just speak more openly and becoming more comfortable with my natural speech pattern.
So letting your stuttering rip. Wow, I've never heard that. Are there a bunch of you folks in the city who use that term?
I feel like I've only heard one person use it, but I feel like it's an accurate term for someone who's spent most of their life paying covert and trying to pass as a fluent person.
So when I was coming up in the stuttering world, we talked about letting our stuttering out, but letting your stuttering rip has a certain something to it. That's pretty cool. So Joe Cordy, who's a Stutter Talk host, and he happened to also have been a client at the American Institute for Stuttering in Manhattan. I think I've heard him say something like stuttering is rad or rad stuttering. So that might be pretty close. I'll have to ask him more about that. I got a lot more questions to ask you, but I want to let the listeners know that this is our fourth episode in a series featuring members of the National Stuttering Association's New York City chapters. And one of the reasons that we're featuring you and the other good folks from your NYC chapters is that you guys are hosting a one-day conference on May 15th, 2016 in Manhattan titled The Past, Present, and Future of Stuttering. Event details are at nycstutters.org. And I'm going to ask you just a little bit about that workshop in a while, but about your specific stuttering, you report having a lot of shame about showing the world that you stutter, Darren. How does this affect your daily living and what you are doing now to face this shame?
So yeah, I have no problem actually admitting that I'm a person who stutters and talking about my stuttering. I think that it can put the listener at ease, depending on the context. But when it comes to actually showing the stuttering, that's proven to be the real challenge. There's just something about my stuttering. It's I see it as a vulnerability. To me, it shows that I'm not perfect. I know that no one's perfect, so it's kind of ridiculous. But that's just the way that I look at it. The way that affects my daily life. I mean, socially, it presents some challenges, as well as my life at work. I mean, what I'm doing requires a lot of communication in the lab and at conferences, at lab meetings, and things like that. So not being able to participate and engage the way that I want to is it's disheartening, and I feel like I'm doing a disservice to myself as well as my colleagues. Socially, it's getting a little bit better. When I was in high school, my stuttering started getting a lot worse, and that's when I started retreating a little bit more. I spent a lot more time by myself. When I went to college, I started realizing that nobody really cared about my stuttering. I cared more about it than anybody else did, so it became a little bit easier to put myself out there. But it's still a work in progress. I'm hoping that getting involved in organizations like the National Stuttering Association and getting involved in other organizations here in New York will put me in a better space socially.
I'm so glad that you are on Stutter Talk today. It's great to hear from someone like you who is really taking on this stuttering challenge. So you had mentioned that participation in college, in med school, is challenging for you. Is that because you're avoiding talking or you're avoiding stuttering? Is that because it's physically hard for you to get the words out as quickly as you would like? Or what is the hindrance to participation?
So I think it's a little bit of all of that. I think that at this point, I've just had so many instances where I've struggled with my speech, and I see stuttering as more of a chore. So before I even open my mouth, I'm thinking, well, how much effort is this going to take to get out? Because normally there's just a lot going on in my mind, so I'm worried about not stuttering and forming a coherent sentence, while also trying to piece together the conversation, because there's a lot of intricate language involved in science. So to be able to talk about that effectively, that requires a lot of brain power and focus. So oftentimes my focus is divided, which makes it a lot more difficult to get my points across.
It sounds like your stuttering experience is a very tiring experience. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think that's led to me just retreating a little bit more and not always saying what I want to say.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us here with Darren Johnson, who is a 22-year-old graduate student in New York City pursuing a PhD in chemical biology at Weill Cornell Medical College. Mr. Johnson has been active in the New York City self-help stuttering support world for about a year now. So it sounds like you're describing, I think you said the word chore, that stuttering is just a real chore during med school right now in your life. And this topic has been going on forever in the stuttering world. It's been on the last few Stutter Talk episodes, this balance between acceptance of stuttering versus changing how we speak to make speaking more easier. Where do you come down on this? Do you favor one over the other? Do you favor acceptance over changing how you talk? Do you value them both differently? How would you say it?
I think I value acceptance over changing the way that I speak. But of course, I feel like there's always that part of me that would like to speak easier. But I think that comes with acceptance. So I think I value both, but I value acceptance more because I know that acceptance is what's really gonna make life a little bit easier.
It's such an interesting topic because I've said over the years that most of my journey was acceptance-based change, was working on being okay with my stuttering, and I certainly worked on classic speech tools as well, and a lot of voluntary stuttering. But some people find it really helpful to hear that as a byproduct of acceptance, I stuttered less or spoke more easily. And some people think that's an insidious thing to say, like, oh, you shouldn't be saying that you stuttered less through acceptance because that's implying that others should too. So I don't know how you hear such conversations.
So in my opinion, I just feel like throughout my stuttering journey, I've had a lot of therapy that was focused more on the mechanics of stuttering and like fluency shaping and enhancing and all of that. And I feel like it's really great to have those tools, but I've found that you really can't use those tools unless you allow yourself to stutter. And you're not going to allow yourself to stutter if you're not comfortable doing it. And the only way that you can get comfortable doing that is by accepting that you are a person who stutters, and you'll probably always be a person who stutters, and that's okay. So I think throughout my experiences with the therapy, it was always kind of just missing that psychological component, that address the underlying issues with stuttering, to shame. So that's why I think acceptance is a really important part of it. And this is an idea that I didn't really that I wasn't really exposed to until I got involved in the stuttering community here in New York City.
So this idea of acceptance and being okay with stuttering, was that something that you took to immediately? Like, did you hear somebody talk about that stuttering is okay at a meeting and you just knew instantly that's for me? Or is it something that took you weeks and months to get on board with? Or like, how did you get on board with it, with it's okay to stutter?
I think because my mom, she had a severe stutter up until she was a teenager. So she always understood my struggle. So she was always very supportive of me, and she would always tell me that that it's okay, that things will get better, blah blah blah. So I've always had that support there. Can't say that I always believed her, but she planted that seed for me. then as I got cut a little bit older, I started having my own experiences that showed me that maybe it is okay. Nobody really cares. So that's how I got here with the acceptance thing. I can't really say that it happened immediately, but the seed was planted very early on.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I didn't have any idea that stuttering was okay until somebody told me when I was about your age, and it just sort of clicked for me. So, but I think when something just clicks like that, it's you sort of know it's true, but you need someone to tell you it's true.
Right.
You know, all right. So you are in speech therapy at the American Institute for Stuttering. Now, I want to say at the top here that Stutter Talk does not endorse specific treatments or centers. But having said that, we're real friendly with the folks at the American Institute for Stuttering. So Stutter Talk listeners are familiar with AIS because we have featured Heather Grossman on air, Sarah McIntyre, Crystal Kubert, Carl Herder, and AIS's founder, the late, great Catherine Otto Montgomery. All three B-team hosts of Stutter Talk have gone through the AIS program. So what are you getting from speech therapy? Are speech therapy and self-help goals? Well, you know, how about we just start there? What are you getting from your current speech therapy?
So currently, I think I just needed something different, because I've been in speech therapy since I was probably 10, on and off. But I've had about six different speech therapists, and I feel like they all kind of focused on the same thing. And that was the whole fluency shaping modification, surface level of stuttering. And I found that all of that worked in the clinic. But as soon as I left, nothing that they taught me actually worked. They gave me all of these tools and said, here, use these. But it was very discouraging because it's nothing that was actually permanent. So that led me to exploring other options. And I had heard a lot about the AIS. There's a lot of people here in the stuttering community who have gone through treatment there, and just the way that they view their stuttering, this whole idea of acceptance and that it's okay to stutter, I really, really admire that, and it sounds like that experience really changed their lives. So I thought, hey, let me give this a go and see what happens. And I feel like I'm gaining a new perspective on my stuttering, in terms of addressing the shame and the fear and everything like that, which I wasn't getting in previous therapy experiences.
So at AIS, you're facing the fear and the shame of stuttering, is that correct?
Right.
Now, I'm not one of these people, but some people would say that the goal of speech therapy should be something called fluency. And in our correspondence, you have written about, I think your quote was, the unattainable goal of fluency. So what would you say to a speech therapist or another person who stutters who would say to you, well, gee, your speech therapy sounds interesting, but shouldn't you be working on something called fluency?
I feel like I've worked on that for so long, and it's just, for me, I think I've come to the conclusion that it's just not attainable. Because I've been working on it for so long, and there are some people, and mostly kids, who grow out of their stuttering or learn how to hide it a little bit better. But for me, I'm not really looking for that anymore. I do still hold on to this small hope that maybe one day I'll wake up and my stuttering will be gone, but it's just not realistic. Fluency has just become something that I find is not necessary, and I'd rather just be happy with being myself and doing the things that I want to do despite my stuttering.
I like the sound of that, and I used to always dream that next year will be the year that I won't stutter, and it's so comforting to meet so many other people who stutter who have also been through that. Well, I'm in the eighth grade now, but in ninth grade, I'm not going to stutter. Right. And it's nice to know that that so many of us have been through that. And I want to share with you that I knew I was getting good with my stuttering, with being a person who stutters, when I had my first dream in my 20s. And in my dream, I allowed myself to stutter.
Wow.
And I remember waking up thinking, I have arrived. If I'm allowing myself to be a stutterer in my dream and not thinking about it, just talking with a stutter, like that's who I am. I really felt, okay, I'm making some progress here. It's okay to be me. So you're involved with the American Institute for Stuttering. You're getting speech therapy there. What's something you're doing now that you wouldn't have done before beginning speech therapy?
So I haven't been there for that long. What I'm working on now is we set like weekly goals, like a voluntary stutter at some event, or if I feel uncomfortable about speaking at say a meeting or something, that I speak up. So it's this idea of shame busting, doing what you normally wouldn't do just to prove to yourself that that the worst outcome is probably not going to happen. So at the moment, it's small things like that. But in terms of my own journey itself, I think I'm at a place where I'm trying to put myself out there more, meet new people, make new connections and to things like that, and through those interactions, I'm hoping to be more upfront. And honest about my stuttering.
There's some great terminology coming out of New York City. Shame busting, letting your stuttering rip, authentic stuttering. Very flavorful stuff. Just great. This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us with Darren Johnson. Mr. Johnson is a 22-year-old graduate student in New York City at the Weill Cornell Medical College. So you are a person of color. Do you identify as Black, or is there a different term that you use?
Black, African-American.
Great.
It's all the same.
It's all the same. Okay. So you identify as Black and African-American. Does this impact how you view your stuttering experience, or does this impact your stuttering experience overall?
This is something that I really didn't think about until recently. So I've noticed here in New York, there's kind of a push to change the way that society views stuttering and people who stutter. And we'll talk about that a little bit at the workshop. But me personally, I don't think I feel as strongly as other people feel about that, which kind of makes me feel bad. But at the same time, I think it's because I feel like as an African American, there's other things that I face that are more prevalent in my life. Like I haven't really felt as much to discrimination as a person who stutters as I've felt as a young African-American male. So I think I'm just seeing things from a different perspective in my energy is a little bit it's focused on something else.
Well, I really appreciate your comments and your experience here. And it's so interesting because I know there's other folks in the world who think that we should be viewing all of our identities somewhat equally. And I find it refreshing just that folks have differences. So it sounds like what you're saying is that for you right now in your life, there seems to be more, more struggle with being Black or a person of color than with stuttering. That I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you're saying that society is more accepting of stuttering than of color. Is that a fair way to say it, or?
This might upset some people, but yeah, kind of. So I feel like, so I don't want it to sound like I don't think stuttering rights are important, because they definitely are, and I respect the people who are fighting for that, because that's going to help us all in the long run. I think it is really important. But in terms of society, I feel like they're not there is a stigma for people who stutter, but I feel like generally most people respect people who stutter, whereas for African Americans, we have a huge stigma that's associated with us that translates translates into the media, it translates economically, psychologically, just in multiple ways, and with everything that's going on in the world right now, especially here, I feel like that's a really important problem for society to address.
Last year, you attended your first National Stuttering Association conference. I don't know how many people were there, but it was probably hundreds, maybe close to 1,000. What did that conference do for you? What was it like to be around so many people who stutter and so many people who care about stuttering?
It was liberating. So at first it was a little overwhelming because I didn't know anybody, and meeting new people is one of the situations that cause anxiety for me, whether they stutter or not. But just being around so many people who stutter and who are doing it so openly, I guess I fed off of that, and I started doing it, and it felt absolutely amazing, and that's kind of what led me to to attending these monthly National Stuttering Association meetings in New York City.
Oh, so you went to the big national conference before going to a local chapter meeting?
Right.
Oh, wow. How did that happen? Because I think I often assume a person finds a local chapter first and then finds the big national conference. So how did you find the big conference first?
Well, that's kind of a lie, I guess. So,
okay.
when I was in high school, I was involved with the Teens Who Stutter National Stuttering Association chapter. So the the adult leader for that, she had told me about the National Stuttering Association, and that they had an annual conference, and she told me about it back in high school, but at that point in my life, I don't think I was ready for something like that. So I didn't actually end up going until last year, because I thought it might be a good experience to have before starting graduate school and moving off to New York City.
So I'm starting to connect the dots in my head. So you were in Maryland for high school. So did you, I'm going to name drop now. Did you run into Vivian Siskin or Ruben Shuff?
So I did a little bit of therapy with Vivian Siskin very, very briefly one summer. She's a great person.
Oh, yeah. And I mentioned Ruben because I know he's an occasional Stutter Talk host. And I know that he said on air about going to support meetings in Maryland. So I was just curious if you had crossed bases with him because, yeah, he lets his stuttering rip too. Yeah, they're both great, great people. So you are involved with the New York City chapters of the National Stuttering Association in hosting this one-day workshop on May 15th, 2016 in Manhattan titled The Past, Present, and Future of Stuttering. Details at nycstutters.org. What role are you playing in this conference, in this one-day workshop? What are you looking forward to?
So I'm mostly helping out with the planning. I was approached about helping to lead a workshop, but because of time, I'm not sure if I can do that. But I kind of had an idea for a workshop of kind of presenting the recent research on stuttering, the genetics of stuttering, and the neurological research on stuttering, because I think there's power in knowing that it's not your fault that you stutter, in that that it's probably not going away. I think that knowing that can set someone on the path forward to just accepting the fact that they do stutter, and beginning their journey of figuring out the easiest way to live with it. But in terms of what I'm looking forward to at this conference is the community. As I mentioned before, when I attended the annual conference, it was very empowering to to be in a huge space with a bunch of people who stutter. Openly and hear their stuttering experiences. So that's what I'm hoping to get out of this conference as well.
Very, very cool. And so are you presenting something on the medical research on stuttering, or is that someone else who's presenting that?
So we actually just got rid of that workshop as a whole, but hopefully next year, time permitting, that's something that I could do.
Oh, I see. Okay, so for the future, that is great. Let me ask you two last questions. Our guest today is Darren Johnson, who is pursuing a PhD in chemical biology at Weill Cornell Medical College. Wow, you didn't pick an easy area to study, did you?
No, I didn't.
Good luck to you.
Thank you. Quite
an endeavor. So two last questions. Is there anything related to your pursuit of medicine, do you think you're going to go into stuttering in some way, or is there an area of stuttering that you'd like to medically research?
I thought about it. I actually thought about getting involved in something with tennis trainer eventually, who's stuttering, the genetics of stuttering, but I haven't thought too seriously about it. To be honest, I'm not too focused on a cure for stuttering or anything like that. So it's an idea. It's an idea.
And what's interesting is that when I asked you that question, I wasn't thinking specifically of a cure, but I understand why you said that. There's the research now that Drana's group is doing on mice and stuttering. It's just such a fascinating area. And for those who don't know, Dr. Drana has been on Stutter Talk a bunch of times, including two times, I believe, in December of 2015. So he was on recently, just a couple of times. So let me ask you this last question. You pointed out in our discussion that you do see this push to change how society views stuttering. And so I'm someone who feels that it can be oppressive in how society views stuttering or reacts to stuttering. But I also think it's oppressive how I view my own stuttering. And I think that stuttering can be oppressive. Like, I just remember a childhood of not being able to get out what I wanted to say. So there does seem to be a movement amongst some in stuttering to say it should really be about changing society, not about changing how we talk. And I actually find that a little oppressive for me, because my talk, the way that I talked, was very labored. Stuttering was really a hard endeavor for me. It was tiring. It was frustrating. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts on this broad topic?
I think I have the same viewpoint that you have. I think that in a way, society does kind of have an impact on the it's kind of oppressive at times, but I also view my problems with stuttering as more of my problems. I think for the most part, society isn't too hard on me as a person who stutters, and I think the pressure that I feel to be fluent is mostly a result of me wanting to be like everybody else. The rest of the world is fluent. That's just how it is. So that pressure is never gonna go away unless I take control, take control of it myself and say, look, this is what it is. You stutter. You can either accept it or wallow in it. So to kind of think that society is the one that needs to change, I think that's kind of scary, because that takes the power out of my hands, and I don't really like that. So I look at it as more of my problem, and I think it's important that I change my own way of thinking, so that I don't let society pressure me in any way.
So I want to point something out. I really appreciate you saying all these things on air today. And I want to point something out that you're talking about keeping the power in your own hands. And you're expressing that by you taking on your own stuttering, you're keeping the power in your hands. And there's other folks saying you get the power by changing society. So I just want to embrace these differences of views and just really thank you for expressing what you just did, because I do think that there's a trend, there's a current, there's a wave that is saying we need to change others. And it's, well, I find a little bit refreshing that you're viewing power by accepting that you're going to change because you want to change. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. I find that it's probably like really hard to change all of society's views on stuttering. And like I said, I think that most people really don't care about your stuttering anyway. So just, yeah, it's more of you.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that one of the people who really influenced me was a man, Dorvin Breitenfeld, who's a person who stutters and a speech language pathologist, and he had a career in the military. And that was one of the messages from him I found really, really powerful, is that other people don't care as much about your stuttering as you think they do.
Mm-hmm.
And using voluntary stuttering and talking openly about my stuttering really showed me that. Now, of course, I have and do come into deeply insensitive people about stuttering, but for the most part, that's not been my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, Darren Johnson, is there anything I haven't asked you about your stuttering which you would like a chance to say, or is there anything that you'd like to reiterate before I let you go?
No, I don't think so. I think I've I've got my point across.
You certainly have. And in the only trouble that you've given me is I have to decide what to title this episode, because I'm leaning towards Let Your Stuttering Rip. But, you know, but Keeping the Power in My Hands is very tempting too, or Shame Busting is tempting. So I guess I could have worse complaints of a guest than giving me too many great titles. So Darren Johnson in Manhattan, thanks so much for joining us today on Stutter Talk.
Thank you for having me, Peter.